Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
America is under attack by fringe politics and extremists who stoke division for their own gain. They rob us of common sense, truth, and empathy. And democracy itself could be on the line. SiriusXM Progress presents a town hall with Dr. Phil McGraw, celebrating his new book, We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity.
We've got issues, and you know we do.
John Fugelsang sits down with Dr. Phil as he shows us how we can rediscover our core values as Americans, heal our families, and embrace the self-determination and governance we deserve. Now, your host, John Fugelsang.
Welcome to SiriusXM. I'm John Fugelsang, and it is a pleasure to be here with a very special guest today. I grew up in America with a very diverse family, half Brooklyn, half Southern, which makes me legally bilingual. My mom called us y'all, my dad called us rat bastards, but I grew up with a very great experience of having a family that didn't see eye to eye politically, but still loved each other. And I think most of us have that experience. You wouldn't know it from our media culture and our political culture, which seems determined to keep us at each other's throats all the time, but every day in this country, millions who disagree get along just fine, and they don't make headlines for it. And that's why I'm so pleased to welcome this very special guest for a very special book. Dr. Phil McGraw, you may have heard of. He's the author of 10 New York Times bestsellers. And for 21 seasons, he hosted the award-winning talk show Dr. Phil, one of the most successful daytime shows in TV history. And he currently hosts Dr. Phil Primetime on his own cable network, Merritt Street Media. His new book is the reason I was dying to hold this interview. It's called We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. And in it, Dr. Phil analyzes our cultural crises and conflicts and offers his strategies to restore and support our country's collective mental health. Folks, please welcome Dr. Phil McGraw.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you. You know, I was going through some stats, sir, and we're not that divided as a country in so many ways. The majority of us support a right to quality education, affordable health care, racial equality, government negotiating drug prices, Medicare covering vision and dental, paid family leave. And yet it seems like we are designed by a culture to want to be at each other's throats.
Well, I think we're set up to do that. That's what we're sold in the media. And of course, we have a two-party system. And that two-party system is psychologically designed. If you have two parties, you're set up to be in a face-off, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it's designed. Mm-hmm. And I guess that works out okay. I always feel a whole lot better when our political system is in gridlock. If it's ever a time where you've got the president, House, and Senate all of the same party, I get real nervous. Because they can just go run amok. But if you've got that check and balance where they're kind of in gridlock, and then, of course, I complain that they're in gridlock, but I feel safer when they are because nobody can take their agenda and run. And I stay apolitical. I'll call out stupidity on either side or brilliance on either side. But I stay out of political discussions because, frankly, I don't know enough about it to really talk intelligently about politics. I think most of the people that discuss them don't know enough to talk about it. I'm just willing to admit it.
Yeah.
I talk about social and cultural issues because I think that's what determines whether a country, a culture winds up successful or not. It's the culture. It's the society. It's the families, because the family's the backbone of the society. And I don't care about, you know, they make these, write these bills up, and they put a flowery title on the bill that has nothing to do with what the bill's really all about. And so I don't pay attention to all of that. What I pay attention to is how we're functioning as a culture. And that's from the bottom up, not from the top down.
You say in the book, in this culture war, you cannot not choose, which almost makes it seem like it's impossible to not be political.
No, that's not right at
please
all.
Tell me,
I'm
please.
Saying it's a culture war, not a political war. And I'm saying that, you know, culturally, I say you, in your life, when you decide what you want for your family, what you want in your life, I put forth 10 principles for a healthy society. Mm-hmm. And number one is be who you are on purpose. Live with intention. Be who you are on purpose. Don't apologize for it. Don't wake up and just ride the river wherever it's going. That's just what you'll do. Still, so many people are born, live, and die within a real small radius around where they're born.
It's true.
If you look at the statistics, if you're born in Pittsburgh, you're probably going to die around Pittsburgh, as transient a society as we are. And I think that we need to decide who we are, what we believe, what we care about, and we need to do that and then live it with intention and on purpose. You know, when I was growing up, I always read about these people that said, well, his philosophy or her philosophy. And I always thought about that like Aristotle or somebody, you know, they had philosophies. And I always thought, I must really be kind of simple because I don't really have a philosophy. But I do. And so do you and you and you. You all have a philosophy of life. Do you think you do? We all have a way of being in this world. Some people come in a room like a house of fire. And then some people kind of drift in like a cool breeze and just stand by the wall and take it all in. You know, that's part of your philosophy of life, how you engage people. We all have a philosophy. Are we going to work hard? Are we going to work smarter? Are we going to, you know, what do we put our time into? We all have a philosophy of life. I'm just saying what that is. You all are going to have it, and I'm saying you cannot not choose.
Yes, sir.
Because not choosing is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you
exactly.
decide, I'm just not going to choose. I say, and we've got issues, it's like picture a big crossroads out in the middle of the country. We've all been there or seen them at least, you know, big crossroads out in the middle of the country. You come up to it, you can go straight ahead, you can turn around, go back, you can go to your right, or you can go to your left. Or you can stand right there in the middle of the crossroads and let the world run smooth over you. That's the fifth choice, not choosing. That is a choice. And a lot of people make that choice. They say, well, I don't know. I'll do what my parents want me to do. And how tragic would it be if you spent your life working to be the best accountant that ever lived, only to discover you didn't ever want to be an accountant to begin with? You succeeded at something you didn't want to do. That would be terrible. I would hate that. Wouldn't you hate that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And if what you really wanted to be was a house painter or a musician or something else, you got to find out what you want to do. And living without passion would just be terrible. I'm very passionate about what I do. You can probably tell.
I can tell in the book, and I can tell you're passionate about how people regard themselves and how they regard each other.
I am.
I mean, it seems like you talk in the book, one of the most moving parts of it to me is when you discuss how important it is for us to focus on the difference between solving a problem or just beating someone in an argument. And I think one of the most powerful areas you cover in the book that I think our friends, progressive and conservative, could all agree on and find common ground with is in the era of social media and smartphones, when it's affected our national psyche so profoundly in the last 15 years, there's so many areas where we need to come together and say, hey, we've got some issues in hating each other. It's not going to make a healthier nation.
No. Everybody here that doesn't have a smartphone, stand on your head. Nobody's going heels up. Everybody has a smartphone, right? And how great are they? I mean, I'll bet you that smartphone, or at least your iPad, has more computing power than we had when we put a man on the moon in 1969. Now, those were big buildings then, all these air conditioners and false floors. But we're walking around with more computing power in a laptop or iPad or whatever than we had when we put a man on the moon. That is a game changer. Think about it. And I think when we hit that threshold in our lives, it was the biggest change for us as a human race since the Industrial Revolution.
Oh, I got to tweet that. Hang on a second. Let me get my phone out. That's brilliant. Thank you. Yeah,
that's one of 352 times you've pulled that out today.
I learned that in your book. 352 times a day we go to our phone.
Yeah, and that includes all of us, even old people like me. Think how many times kids look at it. But I'm telling you, when the Industrial Revolution hit, we stopped being an agricultural society and started being industrialized. And up to that point, we were 95% agricultural. We're now 1%. And why? It's because it's all mechanized now. It doesn't take as many people to farm. We turn out much more product now with 1% than we did then with 95% because of agricultural science and machines and all that. But that was the biggest change. And now comes this computer and smartphone. I think it's the biggest change since the Industrial Revolution. And about 08, 09, I say it's like big C-130s flew over the country and dropped smartphones on everybody. And something happened when that happened. Within a year, we saw the biggest spike in anxiety, depression, loneliness, suicidality, suicide ideation among our young people than since they started keeping records. And it has continued to build. And then when COVID hit 10 years later, it really spiked. But why did it go up so much? Well, kids quit living their lives and started watching other people live their lives and comparing themselves to those lives they were watching. But what they didn't understand is the lives they were watching weren't real. They were fiction. I've had these influencers on my show before that say, that's not really how I live. I had one on last year that said, I get up and I set my camera up and everything, and I put on all these fancy clothes and say, yeah, I'm getting ready to go to the NBA All-Star game. And as soon as I cut tape, I carefully take those clothes off because I have to return them because I can't afford to own them. I just put them on for that video. And then I take them back to the store and get my money back. And then I put my sweats on to get on the couch because I'm not going to the NBA All-Star game either. That's just what I put out to look like I'm a big deal. There's a place out in Santa Monica that's just a warehouse, and it's got a fake fuselage of a private jet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can rent time in it 15 minutes at a time.
Yep.
To get in there and look like you're on a private jet. And they show up out there and they put on like ski clothes, say, yep, off to Aspen. And then they jump out and put on clothes like they're going to the beach, say, yep, off to Cabo. And they'll shoot a year's worth of content in 30 minutes, and then the next person gets in there, and they rent this thing out in 15-minute intervals for people to put up fake lives on the internet, and our kids compare their lives to that and think, God, what a loser am I? I don't go to Cabo. I don't go to Aspen. I don't go to France. and they get depressed comparing themselves to these fictional lives. It's terrible.
We got to take a quick break. This is a very special SiriusXM Town Hall. We'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Now, back to the SiriusXM Town Hall with Dr. Phil on SiriusXM Progress 127.
And welcome back. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Dr. Phil McGraw, author of the new book, We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. Well, my favorite chapter in your book is the chapter Programmed by Algorithm, You're Angry, They Profit, about how these social media platforms, they're not just there to make us feel insecure about our own lives, although they're very good at that, but how in so many cases, they profit off of our rancor. They profit off of our rage and hatred for each other.
They actually, it goes even further, they profit off of our children's erosion of mental health. Because, and I quote something in a book, a guy has become a friend named Imran Ahmed, and he did a study on TikTok with a government grant where he opened up an account for a 13-year-old girl. Have you seen that?
It's amazing.
And within 3 minutes, she was getting toxic content sent to her. Now, why would they do that? Well, because they've learned, and so the algorithm has learned, that if you show a box of puppies, everybody goes, oh, that's cute, you know, and they look at it. But it's only cute for so long. I mean, you know, puppies sleep most of the time, so you only look at them for a while. And then they drift off and go do something else. But if you show them content that gets them upset, they get emotionally invested, and then so they keep clicking, like, what the hell is this? Well, what is this? What is this? But it creates anxiety, and it creates upset and depression. Imran then put up a second profile that said, Lauren, lose weight. Just added two words, lose weight.
That was the name.
And the amount of toxic content went up 12-fold. The algorithm started pumping to her, started sending her 700-calorie, 400-calorie diets, directing her to anorexia sites. So they know that this is bad for the child. So they're targeting these young people knowing that it erodes their mental health for profit. And that's sick. And they know that. They know it. We've had the whistleblowers come out and show the reports that they know it's creating anxiety and depression, but they're targeting these children specifically, and they know it and do it anyway.
Isn't this an area where people of goodwill of all different political backgrounds could find that common ground and be on the same side in outrage over how minds, young and old, are manipulated by algorithms?
You would think so, but that algorithm also chokes out material that certain parties don't want out there. So they don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I put up a video a few days ago about my visit to the border, and it had some information in it about children being trafficked, that some of these migrant children coming across the border being trafficked into prostitution or sweatshops. I posted that video. It was maybe 15, 20 seconds. And it went viral like wildfire, just vertical, just click, 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 crazy for about 15 minutes. Then all of a sudden, it was like somebody turned the hose off. It went from thousands of clicks per minute, maybe per second, to dribble, 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 zero. It got banned. Just, they killed it.
Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was. Because I would think, who could object to raising awareness that children are being sold into prostitution? And would there be anybody, if I went into a room, Democrats, Republicans, young, old, whatever, and said, stand up if you don't object to this. Would anybody have stood up? No. But they killed that video.
Well, in a room, they have to show their faces.
That's right.
That's the big difference.
I put up one about the number of military-aged Chinese that are coming across the border. Same thing happened. And when our cybersecurity experts got into it, 15% of the comments on the video were from a locked Chinese website.
Yeah.
And so we tried to respond to the website or get into it. It's Chinese. It's all in Chinese. And it's locked. You can't get into it. But we found it. So, I mean...
And you've talked a lot about the Russian bot farms and troll farms. It seems like there are so many hostile foreign entities that have a vested interest in us fighting, in us being divided.
And I'm curious, when we talk about bot farms, do y'all know what we're talking about? And how many, if somebody wants to push the commentary on a post that's up, and so they get these bots, and so they have a bot farm, they get these bots. How many do you think would be a average number that they would call into action? What would you think?
10,000.
What would y'all, that seem reasonable? Yeah. These bot farms have millions of bots, millions of fake accounts. And they've been around for 10 or 12 years. So trying to find out who is and who isn't is hard because they have followers. Because there might be a fake account here and then a million fake accounts that go with it, and they follow each other. So when you look at them, they're not zero followers that have been had an account for a day. They've had an account for 10 or 12 years. They've got 3,500 followers. They're following 1,400. And so you look at it, it looks like real people. There's pictures and stuff like that. It looks like real people, but they're not.
You talk in the book about how our political class has a vested interest in not solving the border situation. I mean, these folks cross our border for one reason. There's jobs. There's a gigantic help wanted sign at our southern border, and there's no wall anyone can build that's big enough to hide it. We don't hear our politicians talking much about the people dangling those jobs. We hear a lot of outrage about the poor people crossing the border to take this work, doing backbreaking labor for less than minimum wage. But doesn't it feel like the politicians could end this if they started locking up the folks who were doing the hiring?
Well, you know, first off, so I don't forget and not get it said during this conversation, I'm very pro-immigration, just 100% pro-immigration. We need immigrants in this country. Do y'all agree with that?
Japan's in trouble now. Their population's aging, and they don't have immigration.
We have a birth rate now, and I won't bore you with how it's calculated, but among those that are childbearing age, we have a birth rate of about 1.6. A little less, actually, but about 1.6. To sustain our infrastructure, we need 2.1. We don't have enough people. So, which means we're going to go bankrupt in our social services systems. We need more people. We need, and so since we're not going to grow them, we need people from outside the United States to come in. And when you look at the statistics on who the migrants are, a lot of them are a lot more educated than people think.
Yeah.
I mean, like bachelor's degree level. Yeah. These are not all people that work just entry-level jobs. So I'm very pro-immigration. But we need to know who is coming in.
Of course.
I mean, it's like if you're going to have a guest in your home, you'd want to know who it was, right? You just want to know, is this a suicide bomber, or is this a nice guy, or a pedophile, or you just want to know who is going to be staying in your home. And this is our home. We need to know who it is. But my question is to you guys is this. Has it ever occurred to you that the people we have in charge of solving some of our big problems aren't really motivated to solve the problem? That they do better if the problem doesn't get solved?
Ding, ding, ding.
They get a bigger bureaucracy. They get a bigger agency. Their money, their budget grows. That they're not really motivated to solve the problem. They're motivated to massage the problem, but not to solve the problem. And I think we have, I think we're really stupid to put people in charge of problem solving that aren't motivated to solve the problem.
How do we solve this problem? I mean, more border officers that do better screening, make sure the children being brought over really are the children of the people they're traveling with, more judges to handle more asylum cases. Well, or go after the employers, which would end border crossings if we wanted it.
I think all of that could contribute. You know, I asked Brandon Judd, who is the head of the union for all of the border guards nationally. I asked him, what do you need? Just straight up, what do you need? He said, we don't need more money. We don't need more agents. We don't need new legislation. Just enforce the laws on the books and let us do our job, and we'll be fine. We can control the border. We're not trying to close the border, he said. We're not down here trying to be jackbooted and close the border. We just want to control it. We just want to know who's coming, and we want them to come through the ports of entry. We don't want them coming across the river. We want them to come through ports of entry. And he said, right now, the cartels have a lot of control of the border. He said, what'll happen now, and there were two or three people that spoke to this, a former captain of the Texas Rangers who worked the border, said what they'll do now is they will bring a couple of thousand people, and they'll bring them to one area and just flood them across the river. And so all the alarms will go off and say, wow, we got a massive mass of humanity coming across. So all the border agents come in, helicopters, cars, all-terrain vehicles. They all come because they've got to handle this.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happens, all the high-value people and materials make end runs around them. They pull all the guards into the center, and then all the high-value stuff, they do end runs and get them into the country, and they just walk in.
And they're not going to stop coming as long as we're hiring.
Yep.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get some of your questions for Dr. Phil McGraw. This is a very special SiriusXM Town Hall. We'll be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car.
That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
To the SiriusXM Town Hall with Dr. Phil on SiriusXM Progress 127.
How are we doing?
We're great. And welcome back. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Dr. Phil McGraw, author of the new book, We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. You had an interesting time with our friends on The View talking about COVID. You got a lot of attention for that one.
I did.
It seems like years past, we're still divided by this plague that took a million souls from us?
We're divided because of how people feel. I don't really care how people feel. I barely care how I feel. What I care is what is. What are the facts? What does science tell us and what are the facts? That's what I care about. I'm launching this new network, April 2nd, Merritt Street Media. That name wasn't chosen at random, by the way.
Yeah,
Merritt Street Media.
Please.
Because I think this country was built on a meritocracy. You work hard, bring value to the table, you get rewarded for it. I think that's a real building block of this country. And I care what the facts are. And when I hear people say, well, I feel, well, okay, great. It has nothing to do with what happened, how you feel. Let's look at the facts about what happened and what people did and why they did it. And the good thing about the passage of time is you don't have to speculate, you can measure. You don't have to project, you don't have to speculate, you can just measure. And, you know, I said some things at the beginning of the quarantine that said, this quarantine, if it goes on like it seems to be doing, is going to create more harm to the children than the virus ever will. And people looked at me like I was insane and said so. And I said, well, we'll see. And that's exactly what happened. And I'm still waiting for them to call back and say, well, I guess you weren't insane. Sorry.
You think the restrictions, the safety measures caused more harm than the virus that killed a million Americans?
To children, yes. I didn't say to Americans. I said to children, to school children. Shutting down the schools when the children were experiencing the highest levels of anxiety, depression, loneliness, yanking their support system out from under them when they were not susceptible to life-threatening reactions to this virus means that they suffered more from the quarantine than they ever would have had from the virus. That's a fact.
Children being asymptomatic doesn't mean they can't be carriers. One of the concerns was that these kids would pass the virus to each other and then bring it home to their families, often with multi-generational family members living in the homes, to say nothing of the school faculty and staff. It was all about harm reduction, wasn't it? I mean, people went too far in some cases, sure, but it was all in an attempt to preserve life.
Well, we seem to keep the hospitals open and running. We seem to keep the grocery stores open and running. We seem to keep the porn shops open and running.
Thank God for that.
We seem to keep an awful lot of essential services open and running, but not the schools.
Well, we had school. We had hybrid. I mean, my child missed 3 months of the 1 year, and then the next year it was half and half. And it was inconvenient. It was frustrating. It was hard for kids, no doubt. Every kid I know had their development leveled off at some place. But we as a species were doing our best to look out for each other. There was a lot of fear here in New York. One out of every 243 New Yorkers died. People were just doing their best. And you could make the argument that it was about trying to protect all of us.
We had more information than we were using in terms of keeping these children safe. You know, when they shut the schools down, that means that children that were being abused at home, being molested at home, were no longer being seen by mandated reporters. Teachers, counselors, coaches, cafeteria workers, bus drivers. Referrals to the Department of Child and Family Services, Child Protective Services, dropped in some cases as much as 50, 60, 70%. Do you think that the abuse and molestation dropped 50, 60, 70%, or do you think it just stopped getting reported because we didn't have eyes on those children? Do you think it dropped because we sent them home and locked them up with their abusers with nobody to have an eye on them and report that to protect them? I think it's the latter, not the former.
Of course.
We abandoned those children to their abusers and locked them up in isolation where there was additional frustration. And we owed those kids a higher duty of care than that.
The number one killer of children in our country is guns. Does it seem like COVID anxiety has a place, but at the same time, there's crazier things going on?
Well, is it a either or?
No, it's all together. It's harm reduction.
Well, those things that we had control over, we need to exercise and be vigilant about. And shutting the schools down meant, particularly in the low socioeconomic areas, meal service got interrupted, supervision got interrupted, emotional development got interrupted, academic development got interrupted. Uh-huh. A lot of things got interrupted that contributed to an already out of control mental emotional crisis with our young children.
I'm glad you're still here, and I'm glad all of you are still here. And I want to open this up to some of you guys here. Richard Dorsback of River Edge, New Jersey. Do you have a question for Dr. Phil?
Will we have a more civil society in a few years?
I'm the incurable optimist. I really am. And I think that we've had a lot of kind of fringe activists that have been pushing agendas so hard and so long that they've made a mistake and awakened that 80% in the middle that has had the attitude of, hey, live and let live. I'm going to live my life and let everybody else live theirs. But I think some of the agendas that have been pushed and some of the decisions that have been made have caused people to wake up and say, you know what, I think I need to find my voice and speak up and take this narrative back. Church membership has dropped below 50% for the first time in our country's history. And I think that's evidence that the family unit is starting, not starting, but it's evidence that the family unit is deteriorating. People usually join churches because they've had a child. And so they're going to get the child christened, baptized, whatever that particular religion does. And the birth rate has dropped down and church membership has dropped with it. That seems to be highly correlated. So a lot of the things that go into keeping our families and communities cohesive have gone the wrong direction. And I think this is going to turn around. I think we're starting to get some pushback against some of these extreme sort of fringe ideologies. You can't rewrite history. You can't rewrite science. You can't rewrite biology. You can't pay people not to work and then say, wonder what happened to the supply chain. You know, if you if you can make more money sitting at home in a beanbag eating Cheetos than you can going to work, where do you think you're going to find people? They're going to be at home in a beanbag eating Cheetos. So that's one of the most fundamental principles of psychology. Don't reward behavior. Don't reward bad behavior. Don't reward behavior you don't want to see more of. So they spent $5.5 trillion during COVID in stimulus checks and extensions of unemployment and bonuses and stuff. I was in Hollywood at the time, and there were a lot of people that could make more money not working than they could working, particularly because gas was $7 a gallon. And so if you had to commute 40 mm-hmm. miles each way and you were paying $7 a gallon, you really could make more money. You stay at home and not work, just collect unemployment. And that's turning everything upside down. I think people are saying this can't happen. And so I think everybody is kind of starting to say, we got to get back to what's made this country work. And I think we're seeing it in our colleges where they're saying our goal is equal outcome. There's no equal outcome because there's not equal input. You got the guy eating Cheetos. You got the guy working his butt off. You're not going to have equal outcome. We don't even have equal opportunity. We should really work hard to equalize opportunity, but not outcome. We really should work hard for equal opportunity.
Let's go right next to you, Kyle from Wisconsin.
Hey, Kyle.
My question for you is, what will be the generational longitudinal, did I say that right?
Longevity?
Yeah, thank you. Effects of social media and children. Do you think there will be a generation of children who can't properly socialize?
Yes.
And it's too late for the adults already.
Yeah. No, that's such a great question. And look, there are always unintended negative consequences to big breakthroughs and all, always. And I'm a big fan of technology. I'm not great at it. I have people that are around me that are, but I'm not great at it. But there are unintended negative consequences. And I've read a statistic recently, and I'm going to be very vague here because I can't give you the citation on where it came from. But at the time, I remember thinking it was a valid source, that the average young person right now has less than one good friend. And I don't know if you've seen that.
But oh, yeah.
Less than one good friend.
And
in
they're
the
doing better
world.
Than Gen X, by the way.
Yeah. And that's terrible. That's a negative consequence. They date later. They get their driver's license later because they're engaging with the real world. I remember when I was 15 years, 365 days, 23 hours, and 59 minutes old, I was standing at the DMV waiting for them to open the door so I could get my driver's license so I could drive my crap car. And it was freedom. You know, you could move around. You could do things. Now they don't even get it for maybe a year or two. They don't care because they're not interested in it. And I think when they get to the point of getting into the real world, they're not going to be prepared. A depressingly high percentage of young people right now, and it's the majority, say they would rather be an influencer than a doctor, a lawyer, an architect, or whatever. They'd rather be an influencer. They think they can make their life on the internet. Now, the average length of a career for an influencer on the internet is less than 8 years. If they get successful, then they don't understand to even monetize, you've got to have so many thousand followers that look at your content for so many thousands of hours for so many months before you can ever make your first penny.
Yeah.
It's not easy to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's definitely crippling.
I recommend this fake plane in Santa Monica if you want to boost your numbers. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard to get there, and I think a lot of kids are trying, and I think it's crippling them because they're not out there engaging with people, learning how to interact and compete.
Thank you, Kyle. We got to take a quick break. This is a very special SiriusXM Town Hall. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now, back to the SiriusXM Town Hall with Dr. Phil on SiriusXM Progress 127.
And welcome back. I'm John Fugelsang, joined by Dr. Phil McGraw, author of the new book, We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. Can we go over to Stacy from Jersey?
You've had guests over the years who've had a profound impact on your viewers, whether it's good or bad. When your producers brought their story to you, did you ever go, wow, I'm going to definitely need them on the show more than once and request that they, you know...
The follow-up?
Follow-up.
Oh, very much. So I've looked at some of these people, and you have to understand, I'll give you maybe more than you want to know. But in an hour of television, you got 42 minutes and 18 seconds of content. And then out of that, you've got intros and throws and video pieces. You get down to maybe 35 minutes of actual interaction time. And you've got somebody that has a layered and complex problem. And I'm thinking, boy, this is a steep hill to climb. We're going to need to see this person. And, you know, I bring in experts and all sorts of things and arrange aftercare and all that. But yeah, for sure. You know what really was trouble is during COVID, we couldn't fly any guests in. And I had some people, I remember one time the family said they were going to drive in from Pennsylvania. And
really?
I thought, oh my God, I would not drive from Pennsylvania to talk to me. And I actually called them and said, listen, do you really want to do this? And they did. They drove there, and we actually did two shows with them at the time. And they left very happy. But I thought, I felt so much pressure because I thought, these people are driving 3 days to get here. And I'm sitting there thinking, I got 35 minutes to talk to them. And they're driving 3 days to get here and 3 days home. Like, man, I got to think of something really profound to say. It was terrible. I was like at night, I'm sweating in bed. I don't want to let these people down. But yes, we oftentimes do.
Can I ask you about the transgender issue?
Uh-huh.
You are not a transphobe, and you've booked lots of transgender guests on your show.
Absolutely.
And you express frustration in the book about transgender care for minors, but you do express concern for society's treatment of transgender people as a whole. How do we move forward and get along with folks who might deny transgender Americans' right to exist?
Yeah, look, who are we to tell somebody how to live?
It's liberty and freedom, right?
And you know, why should they care what somebody thinks? The problem is, in my view, I think that a lot of communities have activists that don't represent the community. You've got activists that are out there pushing an extreme agenda. And I've talked to transgender folks that I've had on the show, I probably know more transgender people than most.
I think you do.
And they're friends of mine that I've gotten to know, and they're just people. They're not. I mean, you may look at them and think that's weird. It's just different.
Until you know them, yeah.
And you get to know them, and you know they think and feel and love and care and work and like everybody else. But then you've got some of these trans activists that demand that people stand up and declare that that's the way to be, and that there are, you know, multi this, that. And most of the people I know from the trans community, they're not that way. This is like a political agenda that's being pushed. And I think it does a disservice to the community at large. And
How so? Does not every community have their more strident members?
They do, but these activists have weaponized the agenda to the point that if you don't kowtow or give in to that, then you're labeled transphobe, a hater. They attack you publicly, and not just people that are in the public eye, but they'll call their jobs, they'll try to disrupt their lives and stuff because they don't stand up and make declarations. So they're always strident members, but when you weaponize the agenda to the point of trying to make somebody stand up and endorse something rather than say, I have no problem with it, but I'm not going to become an activist for it. That's where they cross the line.
The other end of that spectrum would be the bigots, the actual transphobes.
Yeah.
How do we work with those folks?
Well, when you've got people that I think are actively working to hurt someone else and disrupt someone else's lives, you generally find those are pretty damaged people, and they're trying to find someone that they can feel superior to,
yeah,
that they can look down on. And those are damaged people, they're unhealthy people, and their issue, I have usually found, is not the topic they're focused on. Their issue is internal.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't have anything to do with what they're barking about.
It's true. Displacement 101.
Yes.
What gives you hope, Doctor, as we wrap up this session?
We're in America, Jack. This is a great country. I love this country. I love it so much that I'm not defensive about its shortcomings. Like I said, we don't have equal opportunity, but we should. That should be on top of our to-do list. We've got young people that live in the inner city, and I've been in some of those schools where the chalkboards, and they still have chalkboards, are falling off the wall. They're sitting at their desk, and the wind blows with the window shut, and it blows the papers off their desk. They've got a low tax base, and so they don't have the money to fix the schools and attract the teachers. And that's where I think we need to focus. It's not lowering standards to get into a school. It's go back and fix it at the front end, and you can do this in one generation. Those children deserve the same quality of education as the kids in the suburb where there's a higher tax base, so you got more money for the schools. I'm an optimist that we can fix these things, and I love this country. I stand up when the flag goes by. I put my hand over my heart when they play the national anthem. I think we can turn things around. I think there's a lot right in this country that we can build on, and I'm the incurable optimist. But I think it takes people, as I say, and we've got issues, being who they are on purpose, rewarding the right kinds of behavior, and not being silent just so you don't upset somebody else.
The book is We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. Dr. Phil, thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you for doing it.
This is delightful.
Really cool. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us on SiriusXM.